Hey there, you're listening to Filmed in Canada.
It's a podcast about Canadian movies.
If you enjoy what you hear, go to the iTunes store and leave a review for us. It really helps us get noticed.
And if you'd like to continue the discussion, you can check out our Facebook page. Just search Filmed in Canada Podcast. And you can also reach us by email at filmedincanada@gmail.com.
And feel free to go to our website, filmedincanada.net, for our other content and to leave a comment.
Howdy, y'all.
Hey.
Hi.
We got the three
amigos.
We're talking about movies. It's Canadian movie time.
I don't think the three amigos have been together since we explored the Loch Nahr in our heavy metal episode.
Oh, God.
Is that correct?
Ugh. Don't remind me.
That was a while ago.
Maybe
that's true.
Yeah. It's nice to see everyone in the same place at the same time.
Indeed.
That guy is Alexander.
Yes, and that other guy is William.
And the gal is Chris.
Yes.
All right.
I guess if we had done the introductions differently, you wouldn't have had to introduce yourself. So I take full responsibility for that. I should have introduced you. You could have introduced William. My bad.
We might as well just cancel the episode. This is a complete disaster.
Yeah.
That's how they did it at the end of Mr. Dress-Up.
What's that?
Recall?
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Dress-Up. Yeah. Mr. Dress-Up.
He would always... Casey?
Yeah, he's a guy from Casey and Finnegan, right? And then... And me. And then Casey would say...
Mr. Dress-Up.
That's exactly what he was
right.
Yeah, you got it. You caught on. Yeah.
All right. High five.
High five. R.I.P. Mr. Dress-Up.
Did he die?
He died on 9/11.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. In 9/11?
No.
No.
In a separate incident.
But there was that.
His death kind of got buried under some other stuff. Not literally.
There's that. Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where I can't remember exactly what the controversy is, but yeah, someone says that like a family member died on 9/11, but then it turns out, oh yeah, and I guess they're trying to compare that to Larry's father, who's a Holocaust survivor, and it's revealed later on that the person died of a heart attack uptown.
That's the same one where he's introduced to another guy who is a survivor.
Yeah, that's right.
But he's not a survivor of the Holocaust.
Yeah. He just was on the show Survivor. All right. We are not here to talk about the Holocaust or other comparable historical events, but we are here to talk about trauma.
Historical trauma.
Yes.
Personal historical trauma.
In the form of a movie called Lavender. What's it about? Who's in it? Who made it? These are all questions that we will answer by the end of this episode.
Stay tuned to find out.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Or you could watch the movie, because all of those questions would be answered there, and that would render our job useless, so we should probably talk about things other than just what the movie is and who made it. We should talk about what we think about it, because that's what we're here to do.
I guess we'd get there, yeah. Do you want to talk about who made it and what's it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, right. May I?
Please do.
Okay, well, Lavender was released in 2016. The director is Ed Gast Donnelly. It was written by Ed Gast Donnelly and Colin Frizzell. And it stars Abby Cornish as Jane. And...
The Mac? Yep.
The Mac guy. Oh, that's what you're getting at. Right.
Justin Long.
Yeah, he's in it as Liam. Jane's husband, Alan, is played by Diego Klattenhoff. Did I write that down? Klattenhoff?
Do you guys know Klattenhoff. Him from somewhere?
I don't either.
Yeah. He was in Homeland, Pacific Rim, The Blacklist, and Cube Zero.
Oh, okay.
It's one of the Cube sequels?
Yeah, it's one of the Cube sequels, which my friend Jurgen tells me is not good.
So, okay.
Oh.
And who's that? Dermot Mulroney's in it, and Lola Flannery as Jane and Alan's daughter Alice. Okay, so those five names I just mentioned: Abby Cornish, Dermot Mulroney, Diego Klettenhorf. No, I'm really sure I wrote that down wrong. Diego
It's Klettenhorf.
Klettenhorf, yeah. Klettendorf. That's really exotic.
That's one of the houses at Harry Potter.
Justin Long and Lola Flannery. Those five main cast members. How many of them are Canadian?
I would say zero.
I would also say zero.
Two of them are Canadian.
Ooh.
So Diego Klettenhorf.
Get out.
And Lola Flannery. Yeah. And I didn't write down Lola Flannery is the daughter of... do you remember the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles?
Nope. I mean, I remember it, but I never saw it.
Yeah, for some reason I didn't watch it either. And now I look back and regret that. But one of the incarnations of Young Indiana Jones was Sean Patrick Flannery. So Lola is his daughter.
Oh.
Right on.
Yeah.
Abby Cornish plays Jane, who is a photographer who photographs historical farm buildings and farmhouses in rural Ontario. She gets into a car accident, which causes some memory loss, but then memory recovery for trauma that happened when she was a young girl. And mysterious gifts start arriving from possibly the netherworld that are giving her clues to what may have happened in her childhood. And she's also sort of haunted by a young girl who appears and disappears as she is recovering from the car accident. And she eventually goes to the home where the trauma occurred when she was a child, and things unfold there.
Mm-hmm. So listeners, the movie is available on Netflix, in Netflix Canada, probably in US. Anyway, you should check your Netflix or video store.
Yeah, I would assume that the distributors of the movie wouldn't want to be limiting its exposure in other markets. So
yeah, because it's fairly new to wider audiences, we're not going to get into spoilers right away. But we'll give you a warning toward the end as we talk about some of those hidden details that, or you know, the details that are revealed later on.
Mm-hmm.
So there you are. So I saw this at one of the Vancouver Film Festivals maybe 2 years ago, and I liked it at that time. And I thought it was going to, I just thought it might get a release because it had the Telefilm stamp all over it.
Mm-hmm.
And then some months later, I think it in Vancouver, I noticed that it played at the Park Theater, which is dead to me now, but it may have played for less than a week. Like,
yeah, I think it might have done two, because okay. I saw it at International Village,
then
and it was kind of, it was on your recommendation, really, because okay. I remember you seeing it at the festival and,
yeah.
and thinking that it was worth a watch, so
right.
I saw it in its theatrical run.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it might have been 2 weeks
yeah.
at that time. And then I never heard about it again until it showed up on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of wondering, because one of the local papers gave it a poor review, I did wonder if I was wrong on it.
Yeah.
But on this rewatch, I still like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like it too. I think some of the genre elements that it employs are a bit heavy-handed and take away from some of the stronger thematic elements that are going on. Specifically the score, I find to just Oof. Be really...
Yes.
Like I find it's really effective in some parts, but then in others, it's just very...
It's
like,
wince-inducing.
Yeah. But it's all. But I think in some moments, like when they're in the house and like, you know, like the young girl that she's being haunted by is showing up and like just those, I don't know. It's just kind of that. I can't really describe what I found off-putting about the music in certain instances, but it just felt kind of like it was trying to force a reaction in the way that, you know, a jump scare might. Whereas in other moments, it's this much more kind of melodic orchestral type of score, which I really enjoyed. And then just some of those kind of like haunted house type elements didn't really work as well for me. But then like there's some sequences where like when she's in the farmhouse and goes into the fort and then like is trying to escape and is covered by the sheet
that's
kind of absorbing her, and then she ends up in a field. Like all of that more kind of surreal horror elements I think are really effective. So that's kind of my general take on it, I guess.
I do want to talk about the score because William and I briefly talked about it last week. I found the same as you, that there were times when it seemed to just be very complimentary to the action, but other times when it was so jarringly discordant that it actually made me wince.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me of the score from Hereditary, which I saw a month ago. Mm-hmm. And then William confirmed that it's actually the same guy that did Hereditary.
Cool.
And it was also very jarring and discordant in Hereditary, but a perfect complement to the tone of that movie.
Yeah.
So I think that it might have just had been a little too shrill occasionally in this movie and slightly less effective than it was in Hereditary, though the same kind of jangly, jarring, discordant strings.
Yeah.
Did you, when you say it was shrill, did you find that it was done for an effect in the scene, or did you just not want to listen to it? Did you find it like off-putting?
I found it a little off-putting.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I didn't get that reaction myself. I did think like the violin playing that there's that main tune I think that develops over the course of the movie. It seemed very mournful, and the first couple of times we hear it, it's really broken. Like it's trying to become a melody, but we can't get there. And I think as the movie progresses, I think it becomes fuller. I certainly didn't get a hostile reaction to it the way you guys did.
So, mm-hmm.
But I did think it was effective.
Yeah.
I guess worthwhile to credit then Sarah Neufeld and Colin Stetson, who are credited for the music.
Hmm. Yeah. And certainly, given that there are more of those melodic elements, I think that's something to be commended or appreciated, given that a lot of modern movie scoring is just, you know, very much inspired by Hans Zimmer and just, you know, moods and soundscapes as opposed to more elaborate melodic elements. So I do appreciate when a modern movie goes that way.
Does anyone know the film process that opens the movie where you have like a frozen tableau?
Yeah.
Does anyone know what that's called or how it's achieved?
It's fucking crazy.
It's
whatever it is.
So fucking amazing.
Is it not standing still? No, there. That was one of the first things that really made me think like this movie is doing something different, or this director wants to be very playful with the filmmaking. I guess it's not a flashback at that point. It's certainly the early history of these characters, but there's kind of a walkthrough of a crime scene, and everything is frozen, like time is standing still, and camera is going around characters who are standing still, and I think it's really well done.
Yes, yeah. The production values in this film are really, really polished. I thought it looked great.
Yeah. I've mentioned at various points throughout our few years making this podcast that I have very passionate thoughts about drone photography, and I don't know if they were using drones in this movie, but timing wise it seems like that could have been a technique that they were employing. But those shots just kind of surveying cornfields and that kind of thing, like just kind of just these mood shots of not even necessarily establishing place or anything, but just kind of, I guess I think of them, especially the way that the camera's moving and the way that the camera is moving makes me think that it's a drone shot because it is that very static camera that's just kind of gliding. It puts me in the place of Jane's character just kind of floating through life and, you know, like finding herself staring at one of her photographs for 20 minutes and not knowing what's going on. And all of a sudden she's late to pick up her daughter, like just being in this constant state of just kind of drifting in and out. And, I find those landscape shots are kind of emblematic of that mm-hmm. condition that she's going through.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of the look and feel of the movie. Is like thematically related, and that's what I like about it.
Mm-hmm.
It is about Jane's act of looking, because she's a photographer, and she also in her photographing of these old farmhouses, like it's a very square composition that she always tries to achieve. And did you notice, like in the movie, whenever there's architecture featured in the scene, it's a very square composition. Like everything, the frame is very.
Mm.
Like it's a square, and then you can see like the you know, the converging lines kind of thing. It looks like a very deliberate composition most of the time, and I guess the idea is that the way that Jane is seeing the farmhouses is how we're seeing the frame of the movie, right? So we're always entering this framing to examine the space the way that Jane is examining spaces.
Mm-hmm. And I guess kind of how you were saying that the using the violins and the score as opposed to piano or whatever else, that is related in some way of to her trying to uncover these memories, and that just the choices that they're making on every level are really all about, you know, like just being completely focused around the trauma that she's experienced and the pain that she's going through just to try and uncover it and figure out what's going on. And that also makes me think of the gifts that she gets, as I think you mentioned, Chris, like whether or not they exist or whether they're coming from the netherworld or whatever it is, the like objects can often hold more impact than actual events, I guess, or the event can be held inside of the object. And that's really what's going on in her rediscovery, is that she's being given these objects, or maybe they're falling out of her mind and they're physically present, but you know, maybe they're not, but she's able to kind of put the pieces together of what happened on this night because of these objects and because of these minor details that might seem insignificant to someone else, but to her are everything.
Mm-hmm. And even though she doesn't know what they are, what their significance is to her at first as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that the mystery unravels sort of, that is the viewer's understanding of it. I think it unravels at the same pace that Jane comprehends it. Mm-hmm. Which
is a difficult thing to do.
It is, yeah, because either you're the viewer is guessing ahead of the character, or the character is making leaps of leaping to conclusions that you don't understand. But mm-hmm. I think it just works. It coincides really well in this movie in yeah. storytelling.
I think there are a few hints that are given in terms of what's really going on or. Who a certain character is, or
okay.
or whether a certain individual is there or not, or whatever you want to say. I did notice a few hints having already seen the movie.
Yeah.
But see, I think you guys both have the advantage of having viewed it once already.
Yeah.
So I think you're more in a position to see those clues more obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see any of those yeah. clues.
Did you find then that the way the mystery is unraveled. Was it sound? Did you think it played fair?
There's two things that happened in the movie that didn't work for me that I think shake out in the reveal, but felt sloppy until I got to the reveal. And they were her uncle, played by Dermot Mulroney, says, "Your dad was an alcoholic, but he was kind and he loved you kids. But he lost his temper like anyone else. It was merciful." What was merciful? I don't understand. Are you saying that he, in an alcoholic rage, murdered most of his family? Then what was merciful? So I felt that, I think it was supposed to be exposition, but it seemed a little clunky and it didn't quite ring true until you get to the end. And then...
So was that beat that made you like just question, was it poorly, was it poor exposition? Or what do you think, like, there was something that is a clue for later on?
It felt like poor exposition.
Ah. Okay.
Because either say that he was, you know, a cruel man and a raging alcoholic with a bad temper. I think, how can you be kind and alcoholic, have a bad temper, and it was merciful? Like, those four things don't go together. So I'm confused by what the brother, the uncle, is trying to say about his brother. It's unclear. It doesn't seem consistent. So that was just a, well, I wonder what he's trying to say about his brother. I don't think I understand what he's trying to say about his brother. And then when Jane goes into the antique store, and the woman at the counter hands her a laminated newspaper that has farmhouse slang. I was just like, oh, this... And again, it, something happens at the end that it all comes together, but yeah. I was just like, oh, an absolute eye roller for me.
It's like turning on the TV and you have like the newscast of exactly the thing you want to know about.
Yeah, yeah. Like in, and it was laminated and everything. I'm like, what?
Like in Shaun of the Dead when he turns on the TV and it's talking about the zombie outbreak, but keeps flipping the channel. But even like at each channel change... results in the story still being consistent, right. But they're still just not paying attention to it all. It's just like, oh, this is just the news, whatever, fuck it. Like,
right. Okay, right. So, but Chris, you're saying that you had one reaction as you're learning what the movie's telling you, and then that kind of flipped, or it was just made sense to you at the end because of the resolution?
Yeah, I mean, those were pieces put in place for a reveal, but I'm not comfortable with that in a film. I think it has to be solid the whole way through, whether you get a big, surprise at the end or not. Everything has to line up pretty well. And I just felt that those two things really took me out of it because neither one of them really made sense to me.
Yeah, I never really gave consideration to the newspaper clipping, like that being like unbelievable or like way too coincidental that, you know, she ends up in this antique place and like all the butterfly effect, whatever.
Right.
But doesn't she see it? Doesn't she say, what's that? And then the shopkeeper hands it to her.
And then the shopkeeper says something really, she says, I don't believe everything you read in the news. And it was such an awkward line as well. What? So the fact that it's there, the fact that it's laminated, and the fact that the storekeeper says, you can't believe everything you read in the news. It just was, it felt... like it was trying really hard and it was simply just too on point.
So, okay. All right.
Though, can I, on a positive note, the car accident scene was beautiful. What a beautifully orchestrated and choreographed car accident. I don't know how they do that. It's a car on a gimbal. No idea.
Yeah.
Beautiful. When she's at the antique store. I think that's also the scene that we have in the hay maze.
Yes.
Oh, I love that scene.
Yeah.
I know we've seen it done in The Shining, and that was really effective.
The shinning.
That's right. I loved it. And what I think was the 1-2 punch was the mania of not being able to find Liam in this hay maze, but the way she exits it, I thought was fantastic.
Just bursts out of it.
Yeah, because wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Like, I'm either going to climb the wall or I'm just going to punch right through the fucking hay because I'm going to have a breakdown unless I can get out.
Yeah.
And you can't get out. So
yeah.
I thought that was, I loved that scene.
I agree. I liked it.
We went to the Sunflower Festival in Chilliwack recently and deliberately did not go into the maze part.
Too fresh?
Yeah. Oh, no, I hadn't seen this movie recently, okay. I don't think I would have done it. We went to the one at the Van Dusen Gardens, and it's, like, pretty short, and it's, you know, there's just, like, a bunch of kids running around, but I even just started to get a bit stressed out.
Oh, okay.
Danny! Come here, you little pup! Terrifying.
Yeah. Going back to the landscape and connecting it with hay and farms and all this stuff. Corn. The first few times I saw the cornfields, I was wondering if it was a digital effect or if it was fake. But
didn't the uncle say it's soybeans?
I think he said that. I don't remember. There's something about
soybeans. I don't know what soybeans look like when they're growing.
Oh, okay.
So it looks like corn to us because we're not farmers and it's tall and green.
Do you think that's why it's... Well, it wasn't what the product was. It was just like the quality of the color, I thought, mm-hmm. was really striking.
Mm.
Like, it just looked like this very leathery green that seemed very consistent for the whole field. And I don't know if it's just like they had access to this field at the right time or whatever, or if it was there was some sort of visual trickery done later, but it was bordering on surreal that I just was a bit creeped out by seeing corn or whatever this thing that was this crop that was growing.
Mm.
It almost seemed malevolent. Is that what you mean?
Oh, well, I wasn't going to say that, but certainly...
Because when the little girl is walking through there, I'm very uncomfortable.
There's this feeling of dread.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, it's just, again, it's just another quality of the movie that I thought really added to the sense of something doesn't feel right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it looked like, you know, they looked like really healthy crops they were growing. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Shall we get into spoilers?
Yeah, is there anything... There's nothing left to be said to about the movie? I guess we're... are you guys on board with Abbie Cornish's portrayal of Jane?
Yes.
Can I tell you I've got one beef? I'm a real negative Nelly today, I apologize. She gets out of the car...
That's usually my job, so.
And so she's in the hospital and she's wearing, you know, the paper gown and whatever. And her makeup is flawless. So we see this beautiful, you know, choreographed car accident. Almost everyone that gets into a car accident gets two black eyes from the airbag being deployed.
Yeah.
Or at least like a cut lip because the airbag just surprises you. Or a broken wrist. If you're doing this, then... The airbag deployed. There's no damage. She doesn't even have like a good looking, well placed scratch on her face. Her hair and makeup are perfect. Now maybe that's just like a lady thing, but I'm telling you, do not wake up from a car accident looking like gorgeous Abbie Cornish. So that took me out of it because then that's not real. You were in a car accident.
But no,
I want some groove.
But the car accident happened in slow motion, though.
Oh,
so.
That's right. She had time to put on a full face and avoid the airbag.
Yeah.
I like her performance as well. I like Diego Klattenhoff's performance of the husband. Because it would have been a throwaway kind of role, but mm-hmm. I thought... something about what he was doing with it that just, it seemed like a husband and father who was not jumping to conclusions, that he was kind of giving her time to sort out whatever this was in her head. And
at the same time, I felt like there was a bit of like bitches be crazy. Like just his reactions in some instances were just like clearly she's been through this trauma. Like, you know, whether she knows what it is or not, like, obviously it's having this huge impact on her, like, just try and maybe be more supportive in some instances. But then, yeah, at the same time, like, he goes to the house with her.
Mm-hmm.
The rapport with the daughter is, he's obviously very loving with her. And
yeah, I just think it's kind of a small role in terms of everything that's going on. But mm-hmm. I think he seems to embody it with what works.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he Like, I guess I would have expected that role to be the father or the husband who just says, like, no, this is crazy. We're not doing any of this. And mm-hmm. you know, I don't believe you and all that kind of stuff. But he hits that gray zone where he wants to go along with it, but he's not fully on board.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. All right, we're moving into the spoiler section, I guess.
Oh, boy.
Dun, dun.
I'm going to, in the show notes, listeners, I hopefully will have just indicated the rough time code of when we're talking about spoilers. So if you just want to skip past spoilers, refer to the show notes and go forward to the conclusion of this episode or listen straight through. Where are we going from here? Is there something, so is it about things that bother you? Is that what we have to be talked about in spoilers, or is it stuff that worked?
No, I guess just the full reveal of what happened is the most interesting aspect of that, because it's almost like a Rube Goldberg machine in how, you know, the tragedy builds upon the tragedy and you know,
right.
This awful thing that happens kind of snowballs into causing mm-hmm. a much bigger and much worse tragedy.
Right.
I think that all really, although perhaps, Chris, maybe you have a different perspective on this given the level of coincidence that's used at other points in the movie. I'm curious to know what your thoughts are on how the whole murder scene, crime scene comes together in that way. I guess I could see that being like this is ridiculous, like, you know, she falls, she hits the dad, they fall down the stairs, like all that kind of shit. But
you're talking about like the crime scene that we see at the beginning, we find out at the end how things got placed where they are, yeah. how everyone ended up where they are,
mm-hmm.
Which then resolves Jane's her 22 your amnesia about the mm-hmm. incident, right?
The fact that she had sustained a head injury that caused her
right.
Memory issues, even as just a grown-up and a mom and a wife.
Mm-hmm.
So that first head injury, because they called it the second head injury when she had the car accident.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Did you guys know that the clerk who hands her the newspaper article is her mother?
Actually, before we get there, sorry. Because I think, because Alexander was asking about whether you thought it was too coincidental that the way that everything was explained.
Yeah, a little bit.
You did? Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Coincidental good or coincidental bad?
It works. I don't want like an M. Night Shyamalan thing where you're reverse engineering. You already know what the conclusion is. Then you're building the plot backwards. So it didn't totally work for me.
Isn't it that he deliberately holds everything back from the audience until the last 5 minutes, and then it's like, bam, they're in a fucking thing and it's the future. I'm talking about The Village. That's another movie that I hate.
I haven't seen it. Thank you. I was not going to see it. But those details that seem like reverse engineered, though, that's what kind of gives it its own character. Mm-hmm. Like, when you see the crime scene, you kind of you can put together an explanation
certainly,
in your head.
Yes.
But it's just it doesn't quite elevate it. And I think what we find out in the flashback, it does elevate it. I think there's the one moment when Jane runs out of the room and runs into her father, and then how that explodes into a series of things. I mean, even though it was my second time watching it, I kind of forgot about it because it was 2 years ago. I gasped because when I realized what was about to happen and how those things were piling on top of each other. So I kind of like that it happened, that these details that you say are a bit too contrived, I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, like I said, how this one heinous act of the uncle you know, attempting to molest the sister, that he doesn't end up achieving that goal, but causes this much worse tragedy, and not even really necessarily by his own hand in a way. Like he kills the mother, but the father and the sister die more so just because of the circumstance. And you know, she's got asthma, so she's not able to get her puffer, and he's kind of off in his own head. I feel like if it were just like he hits the mom on the head and then he chokes the sister and then he pushes the dad down the stairs, like if he's the actor in all of those instances, it would be less impactful in my mind, because it's then like, oh, like it's just this horribly evil person,
right?
Whereas the way that it unfolds, it feels more, even though it is like a game of mousetrap, like it feels, I guess, more it feels more tragic to me.
Yeah, I mean, there's like layers of evil, and you know, he hits the first one by being a child molester, but he's actually not a mass murderer.
Mm-hmm.
So I did like that it wasn't at his hands, but his actions had this impact, which meant that two other people died.
Mm-hmm. And that a third is left living a fractured life.
Mm. He thought she was dead.
Yeah.
I think you articulated that well, Alexander. Yeah, it's because the coincidence, the circumstances just made it even worse than if it was just a killer on a rampage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because there's just so much sadness too, like the sister dying in her bed, and the father not being able to do anything
because he's got the drinking problem, and yeah. So he was passed out
and didn't know what was going on, and then practically dies by accident, and so there's just a lot more tragedy, and when you think about it like the trauma that Jane suffers because of that, it could that could certainly amplify it. The fact that her character caused some of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, like she would feel partially responsible for her father's death.
How would you explain what she sees when she sees Liam? So when she sees him as a psychiatrist, what face is she seeing? Because when we go back, we see her flipping cards to increase her memory
to no one. Yeah,
but then she sees Liam in the hay maze and at the antique store.
Yeah,
and then we see him sort of hovering near the barn, and we don't know who he is.
Mm.
How does she see him? Was there never a psychologist that wanted to talk to her?
Never.
And it didn't look like her dad. It looked like she was talking to her dad as she was flipping cards. So was her dad already visiting her?
Like as a ghost?
Or,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's sort of... I think from the point of when she visits the house to take the photographs in one of the early scenes, like it's kind of from there that I think she gets the first package soon after that, and it just all kind of builds from there, yeah.
The movie is... one of the foundations of the movie is that it believes in ghosts, and that ghosts have some sort of, if they don't have a physical form in the world, they seem to influence things, or they're able to affect things. Mm-hmm. So I think that is more so once we get to the resolution, you have to accept it. But certainly the logic of the movie requires that you accept there's ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
Are you okay with that?
They're also vengeful ghosts.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
But so, yeah, the ghosts only exist in the house. Like the stuff with where she's like talking to the psychologist that is her father, like that sort of stuff, I don't necessarily, I feel like I can, I can contextualize it in my mind as in a different way, because it represents, like, it's kind of, he's like you can, even if ghosts don't exist, people from your past can appear in your life in unexpected ways.
Yeah.
I guess I mentioned earlier that, like, I was having trouble recounting the events of this movie, because it was putting me in a place of kind of re-experiencing some of my own trauma, and I have vivid experiences from my childhood where I didn't grow up with my mom, but like, I would have these experiences where I would think that I would see her on the street, and it was like the scariest thing that could ever happen to me. And even like, just thinking about it right now, it just, like, freaks me out, because, like, I would see her face. And so in that way, like, I feel like ghosts can exist, mm-hmm. even if you don't believe that, you know, there's spirits haunting a place or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. But it could be, like, derived from your deep-seated memories or something. It could be in your head.
Yeah.
Real for you, if not in the world. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense, I think. And when we talk about, like, the hospital scenes and what Jane sees, I think that makes sense. That seems sound.
Yeah, yeah. But then it goes a step further to the point where, like, these ghosts are able to control the locks on the doors and stuff like that.
And blow up balloons. Helium balloons, I might add.
You want to say your thing about the antique store?
Oh, did you know that the mom is the clerk in the antique store that hands her the newspaper?
Yeah.
Afterwards.
Yeah, it was the same actor, yeah.
It was the same actor.
Yeah. But I think that was just another one of, like, I guess, like, yeah, that's weird, because, like, in with the stuff with the father being the psychologist, he's just not in the room. Whereas at the antique store, there would have had to have been someone to hand her that newspaper clipping, so you would think they would get a different actor.
Though I think when you see the reveal flashback, I think the paper is just stationary.
No, it is handed to her again.
Yeah, it says something else.
It has a different headline, but it's handed to her again by the same actor, far as I remember. Do you remember?
I wrote it down that the mom is the clerk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Both times, but
okay. So you think that's inconsistent?
I don't know.
But she also gets physical gifts, so.
Yeah, that's true.
So that seems consistent with the movie.
That's true.
Yeah. Now, my only thing about the ghosts is because they, like, as you said, they're vengeful and they seem to be able to affect things in the world. Thing that didn't work for me is, if Patrick is maintaining the house, he's around a lot of the time so that they could get their revenge on him.
Right? If they're able to affect things, why would they need a third party to come in and help them orchestrate it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unless it was just they wanted Jane to be part of it.
I don't know anything about ghost protocol. Do you? See what I did there?
I heard what you did. And I'm not going to tell.
Is that the one where they put the fake masks on?
That's all of them. Yeah. It's all very Scooby-Doo. Yeah,
I did forget that that's all of them. Yeah, he dresses up as John Boyd in the first one, right?
Yeah, I think so. Silly.
The whole movie is dressed up as John Woo in the second one. But the the thing about the vengeful ghosts is, I guess they have all the time in the world. I guess they're just
waiting. Why wait so long? Why wait 22 years?
Well, I think they wanted Jane to be a part of the family reunion. Oh, okay. I think that's what counts, is like, they're not in a hurry. But when Jane gets back here, oh boy, is he going to get it.
Gotcha. Yeah. You know, there's some tropes that are used in horror movies. Under the bed stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Creepy music boxes. So I'm not sure that I thought, though the production values were great and the performances were good, I just didn't know if it was as fresh as I wanted it to be.
Hmm.
But I like that it played in that sandbox and did something creative and something fun. So I didn't mind that it wasn't completely fresh.
Okay.
I just thought it was a good reworking of what you get from a haunted house story.
Right.
And I think I do think that the subject matter and the way that it kind of handles the trauma aspect of it, I think it's a lot more insightful than most horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree that its employment of some of those tropes and like some of the inconsistencies detract from it, but the other elements that it brings to it elevate it above those lesser elements in my mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you brought it in as into the conversation, but the Mission Impossible movies. I mean, the newest Mission Impossible is great entertainment, but it doesn't do anything new.
No.
But it does what you expect it to do.
Yeah.
Excellently, right? And I think that's kind of how I feel about Lavender. Is it doesn't aim too high, but what it's trying to do, it does really well.
I think because I've just seen Hereditary in the last month and a half,
mm-hmm.
that I can't help but compare it to that, and I just thought that was such a superior horror movie. I realize it's not a haunted house movie necessarily, but I just thought that was one of the best horror movies I've seen in the last decade.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I agree with that. Well, I think something that is novel about Lavender, though, is the way that it uses the way that it gives the ghosts some teeth, I think, is a little bit novel. Because a lot of the time they don't have any influence in the world, and so they need a third party. They need a conduit to exact their vengeance. But it seems like maybe they would have gotten their that Patrick would have gotten his comeuppance even if Jane didn't show up on the scene, but I think it has to do with the family connection, and I think that is a little bit different, that it says ghosts exist and they're pissed off,
right.
So again, that worked for me.
I'm trying to remember how it's left with Patrick. Like, he just gets left back in the house.
He gets locked in the room.
Yeah.
That the crime happened.
Actually, now that I'm thinking about that, I'm like, holy shit! I actually don't like that at all.
You don't like that?
No,
he's just locked in a room with the ghosts.
No, because it just seems like this really vengeful act on the part of Jane, and I guess like, given that she's able to remember what happened and like hopefully go through some sort of healing process, it seems like leaving her uncle to be murdered by ghosts will not be a successful part of that healing process.
Why do you devalue vengeance so much, Alexander?
I just don't see it as a constructive way, like specifically in relation to healing.
Okay.
I don't see it as one of the steps. Like, you know, if you were going to AA and, you know, you were going through the 12 steps, one of them wouldn't be to go and murder your father because he, you know, like gave you your alcoholism. You're supposed to forgive that person.
But there's something very satisfying about exacting revenge. You will suffer as I have suffered.
Yeah.
And that is satisfying.
Yeah.
I feel like it can be satisfying, but in this instance, I guess I just didn't see the movie going in that direction. And like I said, like I almost forgot that happened. I didn't, like, I, since it had a more kind of, I guess tender view of this trauma in a way, and of the impact that it's had on Jane in the present, it just seems contrary to what she might be trying to accomplish. Because I guess the implication that it's making is that the ghosts are now satisfied, and the uncle's dead, so he's just out of her life, and like she can just go on living happily ever after. But that's almost just the starting point of her journey and getting over this stuff, and the past 20 years is just kind of living in limbo, not really knowing how to deal with it or what to do.
I think vengeance is a valuable step in the healing process, or having guilty parties pay penance, I think, is a necessary step. Mm. I say that both in real life and in the fantasy world that we for our entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
But Jane is not the one exacting revenge. Jane sets it up so that the wronged parties can have their revenge on Patrick.
Mm.
So I think to a certain extent her hands are clean. I don't think she's gonna be traumatized by her decision.
Right.
I'm surprised that you had the reaction to it. This in hindsight that you've reflected and said that that was the wrong direction of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think the movie sets up Jane to be healed because of that act, and certainly, I don't think she's gonna feel guilty about what happens to Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a weird scene, like in the post credits, after the first couple of title cards, it goes back to a quick shot of one of her paintings, one of the photographs of a farmhouse. And you can hear Patrick's screams emanate from the painting. So maybe he's not dead, he's just trapped in some sort of photographic phantom zone.
Hmm. Actually, I guess I didn't watch the front of the credits, which I
really
do.
Was looking for a face. Which is always just so creepy and effective. You know, when you just hold on a shot, hold. What am I looking at? Am I looking at something going to come? Mm. So I thought we'd actually see a face in that window because we spent so long looking at
Shall
we give it a rating?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. I was thinking as a point of comparison, The Others...
Well, I had that on my list. I was also going to suggest I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House.
I haven't seen that one.
Okay, all right. Or,
but a hell of a title.
Yeah, title's better than the movie. But it's just a haunted house tale. Or Hereditary.
Which Alexander hasn't seen.
Also haven't seen
it. So it seems like our common touchstone is The Others.
Yes.
Okay.
Cool. I just saw that this year, actually.
Really?
Yeah. And it's a really good movie.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it deals with trauma in a similar way, and has a similar sort of unexpected reveal, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think it's just a really... effective, and just really moody, but especially that so much of it takes place in the daytime, and you know, they don't use kind of darkness as a crutch to create the horror feel or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But without getting into a whole review of The Others, I guess I would say that Lavender is The Others minus 3.
Oh, okay. Right. I also like The Others a lot. The Others, because it has a higher production value, I think there's just a lot more things you can get caught up. I think you surrender yourself to it a lot more easily because there's just so much going on. And I guess with Lavender, I'm a little bit aware of that it's made on a slightly smaller scale.
Mm.
So with that caveat, that I understand that they're kind of at different levels, I find them almost equally effective. So for me, Lavender is equal to The Others.
Cool.
You know I have such a hard time with this rating system. So Alexander, you said -3?
Yeah. So The Others is the baseline, and then plus or minus for Lavender.
So if I liked The Others significantly more than this movie,
You would say...
It would be a minus six
yeah.
to your minus three.
Right.
Okay, then I will give it a minus six.
Yep.
All right.
Coolio.
So going back to when we started, maybe I'm off base and liking this a lot more than other people.
Not necessarily. I just think that I have some more kind of personal gripes with it, I guess.
Hmm.
And that's just, I think I'm just very invested in this type of story. And so if it doesn't unfold exactly the way that I want it to, like that's my own problem kind of thing. And then I guess Chris, like your issues are more on kind of a technical and a script level. Whereas I don't really have those issues as much. So I don't necessarily know that you're off base.
You're just wrong.
And I also did want to clarify, I mentioned earlier about my mom. I do have a great relationship with her now, and that is a very fulfilling part of my life. So that is good.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. I think that's it.
Well, that's a good point to end on.
Yes. So I guess you've got all of our contact details from the beginning of the episode, so we will sign off for now.
Nice to chat with you, fellas.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.